Ever explored the surface of a scheme but wanted a little more detail on it? USA Football Coaches Notes has your back. Access in-depth content features that not only explore the what of a strategy, but dives into how you can implement it into your own program. Coaches Notes are more than just surface-level articles. They're detailed, comprehensive looks that provide solutions to your programmatic pain points. Break down the scheme, learn how it works, and watch it in action with Coaches Notes, written by coaches for coaches. Receive unlimited access for the entire year at just $50. Start your subscription today at usafootball.com.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coaching Coordinator Podcast. We continue our conversation with state champions, and joining me today is four-time state champion, the head football coach at South Point High School in Rock Hill, South Carolina, Straight Heron. Coach, great to have you here on the podcast.
Thanks a lot, Keith. I appreciate you having me on.
Coach, and I think I messed that up. You're a five-time state champion. You've won four in a row.
Yes, I've won. I've been a head coach 7 years. We've won five state championships and four in a row. Last four in a row.
Coach, you've got a great record as a head coach, 92-11. And we're going to talk about all the things that go into being able to develop that kind of a record over the course of your career. But before we do that, let's talk about your start in coaching, and what was it that really spurred you on to become a football coach?
For me, it started real early, and this is kind of a long story, but I'm going to do it real quick. But when I was a young kid in elementary school age, a buddy of mine, Dennis Williams, talked me into going and playing organized football. And when I was 12 years old, and that year, the coach who coached my team said, "Man, you need to go out for the all-star team." So I went out for this all-star team. I didn't even know what I was doing. But when I got there, there was a coach that was on the all-star coaching staff named Rocky Dubard. And he coached offensive line, which I was a tight end at the time. But I just really admired Rocky, Coach Dubard, and I remember the day standing out on practice field saying, "Man, I want to be Rocky Dubard when I get older." Well, then after that happened, and I really fell in love with the game. Of course, I went on to high school, and I can remember again driving up into the parking lot at Northwestern High School, and my head football coach, Bobby Ivey, he was the head football coach and athletic director. He was standing outside waiting on players to come in the morning before school, and I just remember getting out of my car and I said, "You know what, that's what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to be an athletic director and head football coach." So I got halfway there. I got to be a head football coach, but I still haven't been an athletic director, and I'm not sure if I still want that or not.
Yeah, sometimes the priorities change, but Coach, you've you've had some great stops along the way, obviously, right now, just doing a great job, phenomenal job at South Point High School. What were some of those things, you know, from the time you made that decision to become a coach and, you know, stepping out on the field, putting that whistle around your neck the first time? What are some things that really were key to your development as a coach that have translated into the success you're having now?
Well, it started out, you know, early. When I was graduating high school, I wasn't highly recruited. I got recruited by Wofford College, but I didn't get offered a scholarship. But that same year, the defensive coordinator at my high school got a head coaching job, and we used to have a tradition at our school where seniors would come back and help run spring practice with the younger teams, and I was walking to spring practice that day, and Coach Allen caught me, and he says, "You know, hey, what are you going to do next year?" And I told him, I said, "You know, getting recruited by Wofford, but I'm not sure if that's what I'm going to do." And he said, "Man, why don't you go to the University of South Carolina and come help me start coaching at AC4 High School?" So I started coaching when I was 18 years old, and so at a very young age, I got to jump right in, and his whole message to me was, you're going to be involved with sports the rest of your life. You can just, everybody knows that, and this will be a great way for you to find out if coaching is what you want to do. And he did a good job of initiating me, because, I did it all from cutting grass and raking grass to washing clothes and cleaning out equipment rooms and all of those things that you do as a coach that people don't think about. Everybody thinks of, the glamour of standing on the sideline on Friday nights and making calls and that kind of stuff, but there's a lot more to it. But through that process, I got to work with a lot of really good coaches. Coach Allen was one, and then I coached for Coach Ringer, who was at Rock Hill High at the time, Coach Woolbright, who was at Clover at the time. And then I came across Coach Wallace, and Coach Wallace was at Northwestern. I coached for him for 2 years, and that may have been two of the best years of my life as far as my growth as a coach. You just learn so much from every one of them, and I took something from each one of them that I still use today. And then Coach Carroll, who hired me at South Point, and he kind of ended up the whole molding process before I got this first head coaching job, which I kind of got late in my age. I'm not gonna tell you how old I am, but I'm getting close to the end of my career, really, or could be. And so I kind of got started late, but all of those years, I wouldn't change any of it because I learned so much.
Coach, we learn a lot through mistakes as well. And what's one mistake you made as a young coach that you learned from?
Well, I think in thinking about the past, is I think the biggest mistake that I made was, I guess, how do I put this? I'm a fiery kind of guy. So I'm one of those that when I see something, I want it done. I want it done right. And sometimes I may not agree with another person's thought process on how to get it done. So I still wanted to do it my way. And I think it's a good lesson to learn through a mistake that I made for any young coach is, man, be willing to start low on the totem pole. Be willing to learn from the people that you're around, and don't think you know everything because you don't. And that was a mistake I made as a young coach. And luckily I was working with some coaches who understood that and helped guide me through that process. But that was a huge mistake and on my part that it just took maturity to learn about. But I think that a lot of people could take something from that.
Coach, you've already emphasized, getting into it and having to do, a lot of the grunt work right away, for lack of better terms. And yep. I know today, even some of the younger coaches I see, they want that title right away. They want to call plays right away. They want to run things right away. And they're not as patient to those things that, I was used to the same thing, growing up, that coach is going to need me to do a few things here, and I'm going to keep working, yep, busting my butt to get to that position where he trusts me to do those things. And now it's almost like, hey, I'm an expert. I really know this, offense, or I know this defense. I should be calling the plays out here, and that's the expectation of guys. So what's the advice you would give to, again, knowing the young coach coming out of college right now, wanting to step into coaching shoes, what's the advice you'd give to him in starting his career to be successful?
The first and best advice that I could give is find a coach who is going to help you grow as a coach. And just the other day, I had a friend a young coach who worked with me just as a volunteer, who finally got his teaching credentials, and he sent me a text and asked me about another school in the state, and he was really asking about the head coach there, and I told him, I said, you got to look for advancement. That's the whole idea, but be careful of who you're looking at, because there are guys out there that I wouldn't want coaching my son. There's guys out there that I wouldn't want coaching me as a young coach. So that's my first bit of advice, is make sure you know who you're going to work for. Make sure you really go ask them the tough questions, interview with them, and find somebody that you're going to have a good fit with. And then the other part of it is what you touched on and I touched on earlier, is when you get that job, be open to a lot of things, because things change. Right now, we're in the off season. We've been very fortunate here at South Point over the last 7 years, not having very much turnover. But right now, I just lost my defense coordinator. He got a head coaching job at a 5A school in the lower part of the state. And so immediately things start to change. And so as a young coach, you really, when you walk through the door and you say to yourself, you know, I'm a quarterback coach, for example, and a head coach hires you, once you get there, they might not need a quarterback coach. They might need an offensive line coach, and you need to really be willing to step up and do whatever that head coach needs you to do. If you're working for somebody who knows what they're doing, you know, I'm not going to ask a guy who I don't think could coach offensive line. I'm not going to ask him to coach offensive line. So if you're a young coach and a head coach asks you to coach a position that you're not familiar with, you ought to be thinking to yourself, hey, this guy thinks that I can do it. So just that would be my two biggest things. Find the right fit, and then when you get with that coach, be willing to do what that coach needs you and wants you to do.
Coach, at South Point, you guys have had tremendous success, as I mentioned before, 92-11 over your 7 years here, 5 state championships. When you're looking at what you've done, and you know, and maybe even specifically to maybe what your coordinator who's moving on can take with him and what he's learned from you, what is it that you would attribute to the success you guys have been able to have?
Man, yeah, it's a great question. I've been asked that 100 times. I don't know if the coach. I even had a coach from North Carolina come down a few weeks ago. Just wanted to come and sit with me for the day, and and it's almost like people are asking you, what's the secret? And I don't know what the secret is, or even if there is a secret. But what makes us successful, I truly believe, number one, it starts with athletes, and I learned that lesson a long time ago. If you've got athletes, and then if you do your job as a coach, you're going to win games. And we've got really good athletes here. Our job, in my opinion, is number one, to keep them motivated, and then number two, put them in the right positions to give them an opportunity to be successful. So, and that's as far as football is concerned. But then on the other side of that, the other part that I believe that is truly important and what really keeps us going is our kids know that we care about them. They know that we expect them to do what they're supposed to do in the classroom. They know we expect them to do what we want them to do out there and on the streets or in the neighborhoods, doing something that is out of characteristic for our program is going to come back and haunt them. So there is an expectation here that continues to grow. It's a part of our culture, and it keeps getting better and better. Our guys are just – They just realize who is in control, but at the same time, they know those people that are in control truly have their best interests at heart. So it's a combination of a lot of things, and then, you know, you can go look at our practices. Our practices are very well planned. We have scripts for everything we do. We're on a clock, a 5-minute segment clock that gets us through our practices in a quick, very efficient manner. So all of those things, I think, come together to create what we have going on here. But I have to say without a doubt, the most important thing is that our kids know that we love them and we trust them. We want their trust, and we trust them to do what's right. And so when we get in that locker room before we get ready to come out and play, there is a culmination of a bunch of guys that it, like, I hate to use the cliches and all that, but that one heartbeat idea, we don't say that around here, but that's what we are. So there's a lot to it, and it takes a lot of work, but there's just those different facets that keep us being successful.
Coach, that success, you know, when you look at the culture, you mentioned your culture, It doesn't come by being maintained. I think maintain is actually a dangerous word in the world of athletics, right? You're either getting better or you're getting worse. So you're not maintaining a culture. What do you do to continue to build that culture? How does that go from you to your coaching staff through to your players?
Like you just said, it starts with me. And I don't think there's very many of our players or coaches that, number one, are going to look at Coach Heron and say, man, that dude is lazy. And if they did, then our culture would be headed in the wrong direction right off the bat. We're going to work. And you know, I'm here a lot, and I do all the things that need to be done. And I think our assistant coaches and our players see that. So that starts to trickle down. But to get better, just for instance, I went to a USA football clinic down in Orlando earlier last month, right, and went and listened to a guy who that's his job now. And I don't want to promote different things, but his last name is Kite, and his plan is the plan that is in Urban Meyer's book that's out now, the Above the Line. And I listened to him speak, and I'm sitting there and I'm saying, you know what? I think our culture is pretty good because of our confidence level, the way that we play, but we've got a long way to go. And so luckily this guy who sat there and listened to in this seminar, he actually lives 30 minutes from here. So after the seminar was over, and I didn't know that at the time. So after the seminar was over, I walked up to him and started talking to him. He started telling me, hey, I live in Waxhaw. And so now we have created a friendship, and we're going to get together, and he's going to help me with some things so that we can, like you said, make our culture continue to grow. Because if we stop now, we're going backwards. So we're not going to stop. We're going to find ways to increase what we do to make it even better.
Brian is a great guy. I've certainly got to know him over the course of the last year, and we're doing some great things with him. We partnered with him to offer that system that he, you know, obviously that's his business. He consults with the Buckeyes, and, you know, he's offered that now to coaches basically through virtual training. And if you go to usafootball.com/focus3, any coach can get that system there. And it's I'll tell you what, it's well worth it. Brian does a great job with it.
And I appreciate you saying that. I didn't want to go too far into who it was because I didn't know if that was legal or appropriate. But anyway, yes. And I will tell anybody and all coaches, if you want to see a plan to change the culture or make the culture better in your program, that is the place I would start.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting, you'll be able to spend some time with him. Not every coach gets that opportunity. What you're going to find with Brian, in addition to being this guru of leadership and culture building and all those things, he is the absolute master of asking, like, some off-the-wall yet interesting questions. So this is a sidebar, Coach. I was at Lambeau Field with him in December, and we're sitting there watching the game. It was the Buccaneers were there, and Brian says, how many times out of 1,000 would I be able to return a kickoff against these guys to the 50-yard line? And so that became like the conversation for a quarter. So, I mean, I've seen Brian ask these questions like this all the time, and it was kind of funny. Yeah. So we determined one. We figured out that there'd be one out of 1,000. You could tell him that I said that. So, but
I will.
But I'm excited for you. And yeah, it's a great. Brian's a great guy. They've done some great things with Ohio State, and he continues to learn. I mean, he's always out there innovating, spending his time with great people, so he could bring that back to the people he works with. So I'm glad you got hooked up with him.
Yeah, he's a dynamic speaker. He was awesome to listen to. I almost missed my plane back home just so I wouldn't miss his second session. So he was that good.
Coach, since we're speaking about the national conference, you know, what did you think of that event? I know I went to it the first time. I just started at USA Football a little over a year ago. Went to it the first time then, and I was blown away by it. It was something that I honestly, and having been to, you know, probably hundreds of clinics, hadn't seen anything like mm-hmm. it. What were your thoughts on our national conference?
This was my second year there, and just like you said, blown away. It was when I got back to Rock Hill, I had some coaches ask me, you know, hey, what did you think about that conference? And I said, man, if you haven't been, you need to go. Just from the speakers to the individual instruction that you could get from other high school coaches to the vendors and all of the things that were there available, the way they run it, the chalk talk sessions are incredible. And then they have the open field inside of the convention center. They have that field where they can actually teach you technique. I saw two things there on tackling, one tackling, one blocking, that were exceptional. So, that's an incredible conference and very, very valuable. And you know, getting to hear Mike Singletary speak was just, it uplifted me. Just hearing a guy like him talk about a high school coach is pretty amazing. And he was incredible.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about what you guys do to prepare your players, both, you know, in that classroom setting, the stuff you do, your meeting time, film room, however you mm-hmm. guys do that there, and being able to take that onto the field. So, you know, what are the best things you guys are doing, you feel, that is preparing your players off the field in that classroom setting?
I'm going to blow your mind, and when I tell coaches this now, they look at me and their jaws drop and their eyes pop wide open. But this past season, we changed the way we practice. So we go out on Mondays and shelves, and it's a full tilt practice, but in helmet, shoulder pads. And then on Tuesday, we do a full pad practice, and it's full tilt, full go. Wednesdays, we don't practice anymore. On Wednesdays, we go into the weight room and we do what we call life skills. And we sit down with our players in anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes. And I have a coach, an assistant coach. He's my wide receiver coach that I've labeled our life skills coach. And he has a topic that he talks about every week. And I believe that what we do through life skills is helping our players realize the importance of what they do in the classroom. And so we take that and put it all together, and the other part of this of our practice schedule, on Thursday we go out in shells, and it's a full tilt practice. We will actually have contact and so forth and so on. We don't do a walkthrough anymore. They were completely a waste of our time. So, but during the week, so what you're talking about, doing what we need to do off the field besides life skills, we have practice every day at 4 o'clock, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. And if a kid has to go to a teacher for tutoring, then that's first priority. So we will actually have players who will get out of class after fourth block, and then they will go to their teachers, do their after school tutoring. And then once they get done, the teacher will write them a pass, just like if they were going to their next class. They will go straight from that teacher's class to the locker room, get dressed, and come out on the field and bring the pass to me. So it's really not what a lot of coaches might believe in, because you could have one of your best players miss the first 30 minutes of practice because he's in tutoring. But to me, I think that the kids get the idea that, hey, man, if coach is letting me, if he's going to allow me to miss 30 minutes of practice because I failed a test, education is pretty important. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what we do. It's our kids understand that that's a top priority for us, and we're going to preach it to them. We're just going to preach to them about being a good person and taking every opportunity that they have and using it to the best of their ability, and then we're going to back it up, because when we tell you that you need to get your education is important, then if you tell me that you're not doing well in a class, we're going to send you to go get that taken care of, even if it takes up practice time.
Coach, that's a great approach to it, and certainly the education is the most important part. I know at the college level, when we were recruited, you know, one of the big things we would emphasize, and this was at both schools I was at, is that you know, these next 4 years are for 40 years. It's about what you're learning here, because ball's going to end, right? And I think, yeah, you know, it's hard to tell that to young guys who have all these aspirations to go on and play ball in college, and they think they're going to make it all the way. But the fact of the matter is, at one point or another, football ends, and you're left with your education and the skills you've developed along the way.
Keith, it's hard to tell parents that nowadays. It is getting to a point where I'm not sure what our society is doing. I just don't know. I had a conversation with one of our players that had an opportunity, good enough player to get a scholarship, not to a Power Five or anything like that. I had a chance to go play, and the parent came to me and his thing was, he's like, I want to find him a school where he can go and perform and be great. And I said, you do understand that the reason that people go to college is to get a degree. It's not to play football. Football is just a plus. It's an extra. And I get that, but you know, I want him to make it to the next level. And I couldn't believe, you know, that here's a kid that's got an opportunity to get a free education, or at least get some money towards a college education, and they're more concerned about whether or not they're going to play in the NFL than they are about getting that education, which is the whole reason why you go to college in the first place. Mm-hmm. I just think that our whole society is just out of whack. We've lost a huge, level-headed perspective on what we're supposed to be doing, and it makes this business tough. I just have to tell you.
I can agree with you 100%, Coach. And you know, having been at, you know, some colleges that offered great academic opportunities, Division III, obviously we don't have the football money. We had certainly some academic scholarships available for students, so it all works a different way. But yeah, I would be disappointed in those situations where I would see a kid who was a brilliant student take, I don't think there's any subpar education, but I also believe you have opportunities opened up by what you do, you know, obviously in high school and the academic rigor behind what you did. And then in order to sit down at a table with their buddies in the library or in the gym for, you know, a 4 minute presentation and put a ball cap on and have that these guys are signing for, you know, something that they were much more capable of. We give them more opportunities. It's sad to see that we don't celebrate the academics enough. So I really have an appreciation that you've made that a priority for your students, for your kids. And at the same time, though, we're seeing that success go along with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And kudos to our school and our guidance department. When we started having our national signing days and people were coming in from the outside, of course, we had Clowney sign, and it was a huge deal and all that stuff. Our guidance department decided, you know what, we're going to have a signing day for everybody that goes to college. So we actually have a day where if a kid is going to college, has been accepted to a college, and they decided that's where they're going to go to school and not play any sports, they're just going to college there, we have a day where we bring them in. We set up our big banner, and they sit down at a table and sign something, and we take pictures of them, and we make a huge deal out of it. And that's what it needs to be. That's what we need to be doing. We need to make sure that we keep everything in perspective. Man, football is the greatest game ever created, but it's a game, and life is more about your education and doing the right things than it is about playing a sport.
I love that. I love that idea too, Coach. And you know what? I would love to see everybody in the country celebrating exactly that. Maybe our guidance department won't do it. Maybe the school won't give us the opportunity to do it. We certainly could do that in our programs and celebrate those guys moving on. And we probably don't do that enough. I love that idea, Coach.
Yeah, yeah. And give that to our guidance department. When they told me about it, I said, man, I'm in. I'll help any way you need. I thought it was awesome.
Coach, I do want to go back a little bit and touch on what you're doing with the character education and kind of, I guess, what drives that or what's the curriculum behind it? You know, what's the determination of what you're going to bring into, you know, your game plan for life there each particular week?
like I said, I turned the whole thing over to Welvin Simpkins, my receiver coach. And I just told him, I brought him in, we sat down, we talked about it, and I said, Welvin, I don't have time. I've got books in here that cover all of that information. And I said, but this is what I want you to do. I want you to find a topic that we need to talk about, that we can get through to our players, blah, 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 blah. So what Welvin does, he's actually a counselor for our district. He's not a teacher in the school. And so as soon as I explained it to him, he said, Coach, I've got it. I've already got it. So he has his own curriculum. There's every week he just picked a different topic and he went over it. But some of the good ones that he did that I thought were very impactful is he brought in a police officer from the city of Rock Hill, and he just came in to talk to him because of all of the stuff that's been going on in the United States today with police and the incidents that are happening. And I think our kids, the police officer spoke for a little bit, and then he opened up questions, and our kids started asking some tough questions, and the police officer responded in a great way, and I think our players were astonished. I mean, this police officer that we were talking to had like 25 years that he had been on the police force, and they asked him had he shot anybody, and he said no. As a matter of fact, I've never even shot my gun before. So for 25 years, the guy's been on the police force, never has pulled his gun and shot it. I think our players, they didn't realize. They think it's like every single day there's somebody and a police officer that's doing that, and that's just not the case. So that was a great thing. We also had another one when all the stuff came out about the spousal abuse and all of the sexual harassment and all those things that came out right there at the end of our season. A friend of mine, Tony Womack, that played baseball, Major League Baseball for the Devil Rays, ended with the Devil Rays. He actually lives here close by, in the same area that Brian does. And I got in contact with him for Welvin, our coach, and because that's what Welvin came to me. He's like, Coach, I want to talk about this stuff that's going on, but I don't know how to do it. I don't have that kind of curriculum. And I said, well, let's call Tony Womack, who is a class act, and ask him his thoughts about it. And Tony was like, hey, I'll come down and talk to the team. So he came down on a Wednesday, and just, it's just phenomenal. And our kids are sitting there looking at a guy who was, made the Major League Baseball All-Star game. He was a Major League All-Star. He's sitting there in front of them telling them, you know, I've never hit my wife. I've never cussed at my wife. I've never hit my kids. And my family is the most important thing to me. And because it is, and you know, a lot of our kids will say the same thing. My family is the most important thing to me. But then you watch them, they don't even know how to treat each other. And just hearing from a guy like Tony Womack, I think, you know, it has an impact on kids. So we do a lot of things. We've done a lot of things. His whole curriculum touches on different things that just make the kids better people. And then my belief is if you can make them better people, then they will, it almost forces them to, when they're out there on their own, to do the right thing. And, you know, kids are going to make mistakes, and the mistakes are learning opportunities. But to be able to present them with something that they can substantially hold on to as, hey, this is what is right, this is what is good, that's the start to really changing our whole community.
Absolutely, Coach. And I applaud your efforts on that and making it part of your season. I think a lot of us do those things in the off season. We have more time, and then it gets de-emphasized during the season. I think it probably sends the wrong message. Thinking off the top of my head right now, when we do that, because we put football at the forefront. But you guys keep academics in focus. You keep, you know, developing good people in focus. Certainly important things, Coach. As we shift gears here and move this out onto the field. I know you talked a little bit about, you know, your practice week and those kinds of things, but, you know, looking back at your 2017 state championship, what's a particular scheme that you really feel was instrumental in helping you guys be successful on the field?
Well, as a head coach, I made the decision that I'm just the head coach, and so I hired an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator. And I had been a defensive coordinator for years before I got the head coaching job. And now that I've lost my defense coordinator, I'm going to go back and coordinate the defense this coming year. But so I tend to talk more about defense than offense. We have a great offense coordinator, Jason McManus, who does a tremendous job with our tempo spread system. And he has the things that he does, and there's not a whole lot of variations to it. It's more about making a call versus what we're running. But on the defensive side, I would say this past season, what was really good is that we took our four-man front defense and really used all the terminology that we normally use and adjusted it to a three-man front defense to be able to play against the spread teams. And so our scheme really ended up being a 3-4 type scheme with playing some cover two coverage and some combo coverages out of it and using a little bit of match concepts and that kind of thing. So I would say this year I was really impressed with how well our defense played, and but not only just played, but how Coach Winstead adjusted that defense to the things that we needed to do each week. So if you're asking specifically about a scheme, I would say it was our 3-4 concept that was developed out of a 4-2 concept, but that would be the main thing.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of that happen, that 4-2 philosophy and scheme is being adopted in different ways. Coach, when you look at the RPO, which still is all the rage in football, happening at every level, what do you like to do to stop it?
Well, that's part of the problem is the terminology. I've talked to coaches before, and you know, what is an RPO? And some people label it as, you know, the offense comes to the line of scrimmage and you've got a run called and you've got a pass called. And then based on what the defense does, you're going to either run it or pass it. Okay. So that to me is an RPO. But some people claim that an RPO is really an option. Is, you know, we're going to run the ball, we're going to make a read, and then we're going to decide whether we're going to run it or whether we're going to pass it. So my philosophy on stopping the true RPO, what I call an RPO, mm-hmm. is you've got to be able to cover both sides. And the way that I coach on defense is I base everything off of reads. I mean, we are going to read, and our coaches know I expect them to have every player on defense know where their eyes are supposed to be and who they are supposed to read. And so we're going to watch video until we figure out everything that they do. And the only way that I know to stop the RPOs is to, it's all about your cutback player. It's all about your backside player. So for instance, if they're running zone to the right and they've got the bubble set up to the left, usually our outside backer is our cutback player. And so what we do, I've always done, is taught our two linebackers, inside guys, when you get the run read, you got to go. And then that backside linebacker, if he gets run away from him, he's got to come into the box and be our cutback guy in case the ball cuts back. Well, with this RPO deal, if they do that and he comes running in and they're going to throw the bubble, you've got problems. So what we would have to do, there's a couple ways that we would play it. Either we're going to take the defensive line and put the backside end, the end that is to the back, and put him in the B gap. And that way, make him go inside. And of course, that's without a tight end, but put him inside so that you have basically your, and this is out of a four down lineman set, you'd have those four linemen and one inside linebacker plus whatever overhang player you have. All those guys are going to be playing the run. the backside inside linebacker, which we call the Mike, he's got to sit, and he's just got to hang, and now he becomes your cutback player, and so that your weak side overhang player can stay out there on the bubble in case they throw it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of ways, or not a lot of ways. There are different things that you can do, or I think that we can do to help us against RPOs. But it really is a scheme thing. I mean, you really have to study the film to figure out how they're trying to hurt you.
Coach, I appreciate you sharing that with us. And to wrap things up here, you shared a lot of great information with us today, and it's evident why you're having the success here. But if I were to ask you, to point to one thing that you really feel gives your team, your program, the winning edge.
I would say it's confidence, which comes from organization. Our guys know every day. They know what is expected. They know where they're supposed to be. They know what the attitude is supposed to be like. They know when they walk on the field what we expect them to do. They know when Coach Heron starts yelling that they're not performing, and that's all we do. We tell them all the time, man, we can't play for you. We can't coach your effort. Your effort is on you, and so it's a mentality. I really believe that our success right now is all based on a mentality. There's not a kid that we have in our program that doesn't know that we have very, very high expectations and that we're going to work. And that work is going to be based off of a lot of organization, a lot of time. And I think because of that, they like to go out and perform well for us.
Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time here with us today. How can our coaches who are listening reach out to you and discuss any ideas that they wanted to pick up on here?
They can find me on Twitter. It's just @ Coach Heron. I'm not very savvy with Twitter. I only have it so I can keep an eye on my players. So if you send me, I found something on Twitter like where somebody had emailed me sent me a personal message through Twitter. It was like a month old. I had no clue. So that might not be the most reliable way. And so I really just like to use email, and my email address is sheron, so sheron, @ rhmail.org. So, and feel free to contact me anytime. Of course, you can find us on Huddle too.
Coach, thanks for all you do out there and being a great example for coaches. Best of luck to you and the team as you continue forward on your journey in 2018.
Keith, I appreciate it, man. This has been a great thing. Just sitting and talking football is always one of the best things that I can do. And let me just throw out real fast to all those coaches, man, if you haven't gone to the USA football website and looked at all the information that's there, you're not trying to get better. Y'all do a tremendous job, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Coach.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.